Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness in complex contracting with Professors Trevor Brown and David Vance-Like. Given your book and your research, what are some of the things that people, government executives, can learn to make these complex contracting decisions and efforts successful? So sort of turn the page to the more positive highlights. What did you gentlemen learn from your work that you offer in your book, an outline in your book, that would be very helpful to government executives who are facing these kind of decisions?
In fact, I think one of the things that we learned the most was how important it is to talk to other parties, right? How important it is to learn, how important it is to understand each other's preferences and motivations, and making sure that each other really is on the right page. And at the outset, that can look very costly and time-consuming. I think one of the real positive things is agencies, for sure, are taking the acquisition function more seriously. They're not seeing it as just some backwater clerical operation. They're seeing it as a strategic management responsibility. But even so, is the client always right? When do you engage the client? When do you really try to educate the client? When does the client say, you know, but here's how I'm thinking about it? And again, I think this is one of these areas where you have to have more communication up front to make sure that both your goals are aligned in terms of mission fulfillment and the role, the performance aspect that that acquisition serves for the agency itself.
Trevor, did you want to add?
One of the things we put in the book at the very outset is there have historically been two approaches to acquiring complex products. Mm-hmm. One is a very rule-driven approach. We talked about the FAR at the very beginning. It's follow the checklist and be more precise about writing those rules. The other approach, which is seen as the sort of diametric opposite, is don't worry so much about the rules. In fact, we should relax the rules. And what we should do instead is build trusting relationships, the whole relational contracting notion. Vendors are good. Government's good. Let's just all get along. We can worry about the details later. So it's the rules versus relationships. Some people looked at Deepwater and said, here's an example where we did too much of the relationship route. We trusted industry. And now what we should do is go back the rules direction. Our view on these things at a very high level is both. You got to have rules that promote cooperation. They can't be overly specified because of the nature of the product you're buying. You can't write everything down at the outset, but you can put in certain kinds of governance rules that promote both sides getting along in those gray areas of the contract. Secondly, you need to structure a relationship that promotes cooperation, that encourages both sides to continue to work with each other. Doesn't necessarily presume at the outset that the other side is trustworthy. Instead, it creates opportunities for that trust to be built up over time. The third part is creating the conditions under which both parties understand each other and understand those rules. So I gave you the example of they both wrote Sea State 5, but they interpreted it differently. It takes time to understand that the Coast Guard is different than the Navy. You can't just walk in and presume, oh, I see flags on their shoulders or their chest. They're going to be just like the Navy. No, they're different. They understand these things differently. You have to build a mutual understanding of what it means to be cooperative. So the book guides the reader through this sort of general framework of crafting the right rules, setting up the right relationships, and building that mutual understanding that can only be born over a series of interactions over time. Now, within that, there are lots of specifics. So, for example, one that connects to things we were talking at the very beginning, LSIs are not a bad thing, right? I mean, we heard stories in the wake of Deepwater, and there were congressional efforts to literally banish the word LSI from the procurement regulations and guidelines. Governments can't buy LSIs. That's foolish. You need a general contractor. You need integrators to put things together. Great example of this is healthcare.gov, the website. One of the principal failures of this is the absence of an LSI. no one of those 55 vendors was specified as being the one who was going to have to put all that stuff together. The presumption of all of the vendors was, oh, well, that's the Department of Health and Human Services job. They're the integrator. But they don't have the capacity to perform those integration functions. Maybe in the future we'll live in a world in which the federal government will build that capacity, the systems integrators, the program managers, to be able to perform those functions. But in the absence of building that internal capacity, they're going to have to buy it. And the Deepwater case is a great example of how you need an integrator to pull all these things together. They're not necessarily bad things. And there are plenty of positive examples. We highlight the Nimitz, the U.S. military's successful acquisition of aircraft carriers. And here you have a very challenging market situation in which there's only one purchaser. The Department of the Navy is the only one that buys Nimitz-class aircraft carriers, and there's only one provider. Historically, it was Newport News, which has been bought by Northrop Grumman. So there's not a lot of buyers and sellers in this marketplace. They are in a long-term relationship, but it's been a very, very successful long-term relationship in the sense that the Department of Defense has acquired an asset that allows it to project its strength and fulfill its mission requirements over a 100-year period now. And the vendor has successfully been able to remain profitable and continue to produce a product for a single buyer.
I think one of the things about your book that I took away from it is exactly what you just illustrated. You do lay out the right way to do this given your research. But you also give a very clear success case studies too. They're very spot on. I mean, the Nimitz is a great example of that. And how government executives can learn from what didn't work in the past. But let's talk about the future. What does the future hold? And this is sort of a wide, open-ended question, but what does the future hold in federal contracting that you gentlemen see? And more particularly, what about complex contracting in particular? What do you see changes? Any changes down the road? Any enhancement to the way the capacity issue or what have you? What do you think?
One easy way in the future to reduce the risk of complex contracting, that's an easy solution, stop buying the stuff. The easiest way to minimize the risk of acquiring complex products is to stop buying it. That's not going to happen. The U.S. federal government is continuing to push the edge of the envelope on the acquisition of sophisticated information technology, advanced weapon systems, integrated healthcare systems, all of the mission requirements that face us, all the wicked problems that are out there demand the acquisition of complex stuff. So you can't stop buying it. In fact, I think it's only going to accelerate. And it's going to cascade down to lower levels of government. We used to think of things like aircraft carriers and the deep water system as kind of boutique-y, exotic products that only the Department of Defense buys. But the reality is every government buys information technology. The life cycle on the average information technology system is 18 months, and that's probably going to get faster. So everybody's going to need to figure out how do we acquire this complex stuff with rapid future change. That's uncertainty about what we're buying. Interestingly, I gave a talk to a bunch of local purchasers once, and I said, these are people at localities, counties. I said, what's the most exotic thing you bought? Three or four of them said, drones, unmanned aerial vehicles. This is something we think of, oh, no, that's just the Department of Defense prosecuting the war in Afghanistan. No, everybody's buying this crazy stuff. So it's not going away. So the risks are not going to go away. I think the open question is how do you respond to those risks? One thing that I specified in the report that's a theme that runs throughout our book is you got to invest in the workforce. And so a question before policymakers, particularly before Congress, is are you going to put the resources forward to invest in the acquisition workforce? Are you going to allow agencies to buy employees, to be able to staff their procurement function? From the agency standpoint, the open question is, are they going to take the steps to integrate what used to be a back office function into the central management core? Clearly, our recommendations are you got to do that. To buy is to manage. And so agencies should follow the pathway of the big purchasers like the Department of Defense, a stellar example of how you professionalize the procurement corps that other agencies need to follow suit. So that's a big one. Some of the other things are, at some point, someone's going to have to revisit the FAR. The regulatory regime needs to be at least examined. In the debate about whether we should keep government running, our encouragement is we should move that debate to how do we make the government run well. And unfortunately, politically, that debate seems to be about whether the private sector should perform functions, i.e. we should minimize the size of government, versus whether the public sector should perform functions, i.e. we should increase the size of government. That's the wrong debate. Both of those sectors are involved in performing public activities. Contracting is an example of where the public and the private sector interact to generate value for all of us. So rather than have a debate about which one is better, we should have a debate about how do we make them work together. And that's what contracting really is about. How do we create a system in which the government can acquire those services and goods, those products, so that they get things delivered at cost, on time, that work for them? How do we get stuff that works? And that means that I would hope that members of Congress, policymakers, would start to hold hearings not on whether we should get rid of stuff, but how do we make it work better? And so in healthcare.gov, I've been actually pleasantly surprised that some of the more recent testimony has begun to focus on what can the Department of Health and Human Services do to not just make the website work better, but how can they improve their acquisition function?
I think this is where, you know, some of the people who listen to your show, like members of the Professional Services Council, yep, NCMA, NIGP, one of the things that comes out in all of their reports is more skills, not just the skills of compliance and following regulations, but skills like negotiation, relationship management skills, managing the market skills, getting out and actually talking to vendors. And it's not only just having some technical expertise, right? You know, this is what a certain type of IT system would have. And it's not just kind of contract acquisition skills. It's broader set of analytical skills, how to think about some of these trade-offs ahead of time. And I think that's an investment that's not going to be easy to come, but is much necessary. One of the things that I've heard people at DOD say is that they've worked long and hard with the Defense Acquisition University to move away from just FAR compliance skills to really thinking about, you know, negotiation skills and how to manage the market and understanding how, you know, the breadth and depth of the market on some components and how thin the market is in other areas. And so I think, you know, this is where the acquisition workforce has to be a priority. And I think, you know, until, you know, we've seen kind of fits and starts in every administration, and this administration has not made acquisition a priority. Mm-hmm. It has made, you know, the notion of insourcing a priority. But then even there's been a lot of variability. And, you know, if you're going to make insourcing a priority, you also have to make resources for training and development and capacity building a priority. And you just can't say we're bringing it all in-house. You need to have the people in-house to do it.
So either way, the capacity issue is really a big issue.
It's an enormous issue.
So David Van Slyke from the Maxwell School at Syracuse University and Trevor Brown at the Glenn School at The Ohio State University. I want to thank you gentlemen for joining me today. This has been a lot of information. The book is excellent. Thanks for coming in, and thanks for being here.
Thanks. It was great. Always a pleasure to talk
Michael,
with you.
Michael, thank you very much for having us.
This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Professors Trevor Brown and David Van Slyke, co-authors of Complex Contracting, Government Purchasing in the Wake of the U.S. Coast Guard's Deepwater Program. You can order or download a free copy of their IBM Center report, The Challenge of Contracting for Large Complex Projects, at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.